the biggest night of my career.
Okay, I know I'm a little late in getting the end of year show out. It was supposed to come out last week, but Al and I got so wrapped up in another discussion that it didn't come out.
It can be romantic. Last year, I met a woman, and she was
extraordinary. So what better way to kick off an end-of-year, new-year show than with a good old-fashioned rom-com clip?
Come true by midnight. You get these.
4 tickets to that party? You called the right guy.
Oh, come on, man. You know that's not going to work. Here's a clip from my interview with Al Borealis.
Here's a good one for you. What topic do you feel was left unfinished for you that you plan on finishing in 2021?
In known history, there's never been one incident that has affected the whole goddamn globe. I mean, go back to the Black Plague.
That's a great point.
Right? Go back to the Black Plague. There was one corner of Earth where, you know, you could be like, no, I'm an enlightened Buddha. I'm just sitting here in my cave doing my own thing. I don't care what's going on in the Maya illusion globe. But now it's like if the Earth was like 50 different video games, all sorts, you know, from Sims to Axis and Allies to all sorts of video games in one. Now it's like the whole Earth is forced into becoming one big video game.
Let me just roll into it. So, my understanding of what we're going to do here, and which I think is really going to be fun and a great idea, is the classic kind of end of year wrap up where we each look at some of our shows that most kind of inspired us or changed us in some way from 2020. So, This is going to be fun, eh?
I love the concept. Never done it before. We'll probably start doing something like this every year, just for the website subscribers, of course, because it doesn't fit the format I usually go for. So,
you know, I've never done it either, so that's kind of cool. But I think I'm going to start this as a tradition too, because as I was writing out the questions, I was like, this is great. This is really something cool. So let me start with the first one. It's an obvious one. I'll tee it up for you.
Yeah.
What was your favorite Forum Borealis show from 2020?
Yeah. And I've had that question before, just not the 2020. And I don't mean to be like what you say when you have something up your ass, like anal about it. But it really depends on what you put in the word favorite. I mean, you could have like, which show did you think came out as the best one despite everything? Like just at the production end of thing, which one did have the most exciting topic or the most important topic? Which guest were your favorite guest? Which one did you surprisingly, you know, you come into, you know this, different people, different chemistry. Some shows, you wouldn't expect them to go so well. And they, they just surprise you how. And some shows, opposite, you have great expectation and you become disappointed. So it all really boils down to what you're going to single out as the good thing.
Buddy, come on, you just laid out a bunch of them. Tell us any one of those which would apply. Which was your personal favorite? Which was the favorite of the audience? Which was the one that kind of caused the most stir, any of those?
Yeah. See, I'm a year behind with the releasing shows. So, ironically, under normal circumstances, none of the 2020 shows would have been out to the public at this point. But coincidentally, some are. Because of the pandemic, I had to break my own rule. I threw out there in a hurry lots of shows about the pandemic when I felt I would cover them. So I think I should choose between them. And I'm going to surprise myself now. And I'm going to say the one with Robert Bonomo, of all things. Because I learned for the first time, I realized what MMT was. So I'm talking about the money game. The money game. And it was a huge session we did. But I think he had to dumb it down so much that I think not just me, but also the audience finally got it. So in a weird way, that's probably our favorite show. What about you? What's your favorite show for 2020?
Well, there's two that I would kind of single out kind of for different reasons. One is Jürgen Ziva, who, you know, returned to Skeptico, and he is just, he is someone who just exudes so much positivity, love, and spiritual enlightenment from his many experiences as an out-of-body traveler. And I just find him to be incredibly compelling about what he says and how he reports it. And we really got down to some real, I don't know, we really got into talking about some things that really matter. The other person I kind of pull out, it's kind of a very Skeptico interview, was my interview with David Icke. And the title of that one is Love Not Fear is the Answer.
Yeah, I was just going to say that was a scoop. And I also love how you, even Icke gets the Skeptico treatment. I love how
he got a little bit of the Skeptico treatment because, you know, and this again is like maybe a launching point for even a little bit of a discussion of us is, I mean, when I do these interviews, the interviews I most appreciate is, again, something you just said. And one of the reasons I love your show so much is you said you love the interview with Robert because you learned so much. I was like, wow, that is the guy. That's what I love about you is your learning is our learning. Mm. And it kind of comes through that you're growing. So I go into the interview with David Icke and I'm like talking to all my friends. You know, I'm like, David Icke is saying there is no virus, that there is no COVID virus. Surely, and I'm like, surely he can't mean that. He must mean something else. He means that this is obviously somewhat of a planned, orchestrated event in some ways. Yeah, we all get that. But to say kind of in your face denial that there is no virus, where is he coming from on that? And so I went and did some research, and, you know, David Icke, so for people to know, I have the utmost respect for the guy. And I love what the guy has done for as long as he's done it. You know, you and I have been around doing this for a few years. David Icke has been doing it for 30 freaking years, and he's withstood so much crap from so many people, and yet he's advanced a very, very important topic about consciousness, which is really what his whole thing's about. But anyways, back to this.
But he didn't start out like that, you know. I mean, he's not Jesus sacrificed on a cross. He begged for it. I mean, look at how he started out. I remember him from the very beginning, which is why I'm perpetually skeptical to him. He has the ability to say truths, of course, and I love the way he's always hitting upwards, yes. But, you know, the whole...
Oh, the lizard people. Oh, yes. So let's talk about that for a minute. See, now we're going to talk for an hour.
I know.
That's our first question, but that's okay. So this is also the Skeptico vibe that I don't intentionally bring. It's just kind of where I'm at, you know. So I like the tension of David Icke being someone who's saying something that clearly is just not solid science, that they haven't isolated the virus. And the reason that isn't solid science is we now know that through your show, we know that the best evidence suggests that the virus is bioengineered. Well, if it's bioengineered,
Let me switch my answer over to that show because it's so important information to know that HIV is in. Yeah, I think that's my favorite show now.
I'm going to let you get back to that in a minute because I thought that was a phenomenal show. You know, back, we're going to ping off of each other and that's just what we're going to do. But part of my orientation going into David Icke from a scientific standpoint was through the Forum Borealis shows that I had listened to that really laid that out in very clear scientific terms that the best evidence we have, we've done an analysis of the gene structure of the virus, which suggests that, you know, all this nonsense about not isolating it is just another red herring. And what I think in future shows, I said, it is another flat earth thing. You know, when I hear people talk about flat earth, I'm like, I understand on one level that you're just exhausted with being bullshitted by so many things that you can't come to grips with what's real. And you have this kind of hyper uber empiricism, where I don't believe anything, you know, unless I see it, feel it, which is why would we make that the criteria? But anyways, that's, I think, where people come down. So I think people just have this, that has become a splinter in the alt media community, is to divide people, you know, divide people like you're a flat earther, you're not a flat earther, but you're still in the conspiracy community. You believe there's no virus, or you believe there is a virus, but you believe it's a pandemic. This is classic divide and rule kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I can't leave this topic without talking about the lizard people, because ever since then, whenever I talk about how much I appreciate David Icke, I always bring up, who is David Icke? And they always say, they pause for a minute because they know they're not supposed to say it. And then they say, he's the lizard guy.
Yeah.
Meaning he's the guy who thinks that world leaders are shape-shifting reptilian aliens who are invading the planet.
He's still sticking with him.
And I always want to go, okay, that's great. Let's put that on the examining table for just a minute and deconstruct it. And I'll give you the heads up here. I'm not going to try and convince you that all that is completely true the way that David says it. But in the same way that he's saying that there is no virus, gets at a deeper truth while he's stepping over and stumbling over the science, which isn't true. Of course, there is a virus, but he's reaching towards a larger truth, which is this is a project. This is a game. Yeah. This is a social engineering game.
Shock doctrine.
Similarly with the lizard people and the shape-shifting lizards, aliens. What I always point people to on that is, you know, the best evidence we have suggests that we are being visited by aliens from another planet. That's not even controversial anymore. That's pushed out with the Department of Defense. It's on the New York Times. It's in the Washington Post.
I don't think ufologists will agree. That if you say we're being visited by life forms from another world, you'll get away with that. As soon as you say another planet, you nailed it down to a 3D mechanical phenomenon, which it may be, which parts of it may be, but you cannot ascribe the whole UFO thing to that just because we know the whole UFO thing can't be. I mean, you have the Graham Hancock approach and shamanic approach, the psychic aspect. But, you know, when we talk about Icke, we should really ask ourselves, which David Icke are we talking about? Because he is not claiming the lizard thing anymore. It's how he begun. If you could take Icke, isolate him for the last, say, 10, 15, maybe even...
He hasn't backed off of the lizard people.
Kinda.
That's not my take.
If you check old footage, compare it with now, he's got a completely different spin on it. Now he's saying that... He's not saying it's a metaphor. If he did, it would be a great metaphor, just as there's no virus is a great metaphor, which has a truth in it. But now he's trying to say they're not physically lizard people. It's all about vibrations. And, of course, when he enters the realm of vibrations, he's entering my area, the area I'm working with privately most of all. And so I put up even a more critical light to what he's saying. And it seems to me my take on Icke have always been that he's a great generalist, just like another dude that reminds me of Icke is Michael Sarion. Both of them, what they do is that they scout the world for inputs, then they find something, they integrate it in their routine, and then they spew it out to their audience. Like, they are wannabe gurus, but it's okay because it could be worse. At least they are hitting upwards. At least they choose to become like big shots in the counterculture thing. A worse thing would be like doing like, what was his name? You know, the CIA-sponsored astronomer with a pipe back in the day who everybody...
Oh, yeah.
big hero of the skeptics. I mean, it could be like that kind of guru, right? Which is much worse.
Right.
Working for the man. So I am conflicted on Icke. I think he's actually fulfilling a useful role, but he would never be my guru. I see through him. He's kind of, I don't know if con man is the word, because he's actually spewing truths too. He's spewing mostly truths. Kind of reminds me of Donald Trump in a way. I'm not a MAGA guy. I would never join that cult. I can watch Trump critically, but I can also acknowledge good spillout coming from such a guy as Trump. And the same I would say with Icke. I mean, probably he's fulfilling a function that's needed. And I'm trying to be generous with him. So, he's still just a figure for me out there. And I don't think I would even want to interview him. But it is interesting when people like you get to interview him and confront him with some of the stuff that I've been curious to how he would reply. So that's why I know how he rationalizes it, because I've heard him try to, you know, make sense of it in the more recent years. Because what he's saying these years now, last 10 years, are much more rational and on the point. It's like he's moved closer to Alex Jones, so to speak. Less new age, more political. But he began...
You know, Al, we are not going to get through any of these questions.
That's
okay. First of all, hold on. First of all, I think Carl Sagan is who you're thinking of, right?
Sagan.
Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
Interesting guy, because you're right. I mean, but he was CIA in a way that a lot of people, you know, who listen to your show understand. And a lot more probably from your perspective over there in Europe than they do in the U.S. But CIA doesn't mean CIA. It doesn't mean like he was, you know, coming into the office like, okay, what's my instructions for today? Now, Gloria Steinem was, but no, Carl Sagan is more just like how they just have connections and they just have this invisible college, which is another, I'll try and round this back into this year in review. But one of the interviews I really, really appreciated from last year was with Dr. Diana Walsh-Pasulka, who wrote a book called...
I was wondering if you were going to mention that. I think that's probably one of your most important interviews.
Well, here's how it ties back into David Icke, because I got to challenge you on a couple of things, because that's what I do, and it might be interesting for people. So let me... Again, we might not get very far with the 2020 review, and that might be okay too. But I'm always a little bit put off, because I'm so interested in consciousness and I've spent so much time on it, when people reduce the ET phenomenon to consciousness, and then with a wave of the hand say, oh, well, that's going to kind of cover it there in some way. Now, what Diana Walsh-Pasulka reveals in her book is the opposite of that. So a lot of people who point to the consciousness explanation, I put that in quotes, for ET, lean on Jacques Vallée, right? Dr. Jacques Vallée, who's extraordinary. So Dr. Pasulka in the book, American Cosmic, and she is a religious scholar. She's studying Roman history. And the way she gets into it is somebody reads one of her papers and says, that sounds like a UFO experience. And she goes, no, it's not a UFO experience. It's this nun, you know, saintly nun back in 500 years ago that had this vision. That sounds exactly like a UFO. So she winds up going to a UFO conference down there in North Carolina, where she's a chairman of a department, and a tenured professor at a well-respected university. And she goes, wow, this is too crazy. My account does sound like a UFO account. And that leads her to meeting Jacques Vallée. And she goes and meets Jacques Vallée. And they tour Silicon Valley together. And then she goes out in the desert in Nevada. And she finds space junk from the craft. Okay? Yeah. So now this is the same craft that we see. And I'm not saying it's literally the same, so don't get me wrong. But when people watch the Tic Tac video that happened right out here, I'm sitting on the coast of California, and the operations they were running was 30 miles off the coast. And I interviewed the guy who was orchestrating the whole thing, the kind of Top Gun telling this pilot to go that pilot. And he went up on the deck and he looked through the binoculars and he saw the craft and it changed him. He had a transformative experience with the craft. So people who are advancing this kind of exclusively consciousness kind of explanation for things, or vibrations are more, it was what you said, are more in my camp. You're stepping over all this physical nuts and bolts data that we have. And again, I'm a consciousness guy, so I'm not going to step over the consciousness data, but I am not going to suppose that some hokey consciousness only based explanation explains the people who are abducting people and creating these experiences. And I would further go, and then I'll let you respond to this. You know, the other interview, and this wasn't from 2020, but it was from before, was the interview that I did with Dr. Artie Sixkiller Clark. And she is, like I always say, she has a little bit of a funny name. She's Native American, but she's a professor, an anthropology professor at Montana State University. And she went around and collected accounts. And she's, keep in mind, she's an anthropologist. She knows how to go and collect people's accounts. You can't say those are just stories. I mean, this is what anthropologists do. She collects accounts from all these Native American people in the United States, in Canada, in Central America. They're talking about star people that come from planets. They're talking, in some cases, about lizard people that change form. Is not a David Icke.
No, but remember what I said about Icke. He scouts the world to find impulses. He didn't invent the lizard thing, but he launched it like a literalism, like a fundamentalism thing, like it's actually literal that they are physically lizard people, which is a new twist. Although, of course, there had been some UFO encounters where you had not just lizard people, but all sorts of, because that's classical. We always see aliens as some version of our insects or animals. They never have individuality like we do. But in terms of traditions, sure, the lizard thing is an important symbolism and myth. It's tied up to, you can talk with Miguel Corner
about
this.
Maybe it's real. I'm just saying, maybe it's real. Maybe it's mythic. All the rest of that. But you're just, I just don't understand how you can step over all the data and just with the brush of the hand just say, oh yeah, well that just fits into this mystical fairyland, especially when the guys out there in the desert finding the space junk and reverse engineering it and making millions of dollars in this world by engineering the space junk. I don't know how you just step over that and go, well, none of that matters because, you know, we all make up stories about fairies and there's these ancient stories about this and that. It doesn't, that doesn't solve it for me.
Well, I have I mean, you say myth versus real. Myths are also real, but they're not necessarily literal. Talk with Miguel Corner. He can talk to you about the aspect of lizard people in traditions. But yeah, let's see where the UFOs are for 2020. That's a good point. Because like you, I too am like a consciousness guy in a way. I mean, from the esoteric. And despite that, just like you, I've gone in another direction too. Like, I've gone in the classified space program direction, which is the most nuts and bolts you can get. So I'm not saying either or either. I'm also admitting that there's a physical aspect to it. But when you say Nevada, you know, that's right in the back alley of Harry Reid. And also this Skinwalker Ranch oligarch, what's his face again? Competition to Musk and SpaceX.
Okay.
I remember Gordon White. He liked that show. And we have a video to it also. Now, if you listen to that, you'll hear him talk about which states are deeply into the UFO thing. I mean, in terms of which bases of the military, and Nevada is one of them. So I would expect to find space junk there. And something is definitely on the move. Marco Rubio, you know, that neocon, disgusting establishment hack.
Who?
Marco Rubio. Reactionary Florida.
And Robert Bigelow.
Robert Bigelow is the guy we couldn't remember the name. But Marco Rubio, that politician, he's now thrown himself on the disclosure wagon, of all things. Even Brennan, the CIA guy, Brennan, kind of admitted that there's something out there. That's very recently. But both these.
Why would we care? Why would anyone? Okay, so I'm going to weave in my other talks. You know, so in 2020, I interviewed Richard Dolan.
And oh yeah, and so did I. And you know what? I'm changing my answer. Just the fact that I managed to get Dolan on my show again makes that my favorite show for 2020. Go on.
No, you go on. Tell us what you took away from the Dolan episode. No, just and then I'll tell you.
Actually, not that much. Just the fact that I got him on, because I had planned to discuss with him disclosure scenarios for so many years. It was on the agenda. Next time I get him on, that's going to be the topic. So I got him on, and it's still not released to the public. And meanwhile, he's gone out. I guess he got inspired from that discussion because he's made his own updated show on disclosure scenarios after that. So, as usual, because I'm so slow getting stuff out, when it's out, it's going to be old news already. Which is why I'm saying, you know, everyone else says we're the first on this, first on that. Well, Forum Borealis, the last on everything. but we sweep it up with our in-depth long form. So at least we don't let anything. We pick up the pieces. Nothing is left behind after we've done it.
Well, that's good. You know, I don't know. I'm thinking one of my resolutions for 2021 is I want to do the shows. I want to quit holding on to them and holding on to this idea that I have to release them at some kind of schedule, which I don't think I do. I think I should just get them out there as I do them. But one of the things that, you know, really was, we had two really interesting points of discussion, Dolan and I did. And yeah. One was disclosure as a political psyop. And, you know, Richard was, he's brilliant. I mean, he is the go-to guy. He's just at a next level in terms of intelligence and thoughtfulness. And he's a researcher, he's a historian, professional, he knows that stuff. But we really had an interesting discussion because it just seems to me that what we've seen as quote-unquote disclosure with the Tom DeLonge kind of To the Stars Academy and all that to me looks very, very much like a political psyop. And the tip off for me that it's political is it never mentions, it only mentions people on one side of the political spectrum. And I don't care about one side or the other. I'm just saying if it was a genuine disclosure, it would include both sides, especially when the guy who you're excluding from the discussion is the president of the United States. It just doesn't make sense. Other than it being some kind of political move that those guys were trying to make. And it's a really, at this point, we can look back and say that it's a failed political move because they really tried really, really hard with the disclosure in pushing that out. And the general reaction from the public was, so what? I mean, you've given us 20.
Yeah, you mean those guys that you love to hate, they'd really tried. Harry Reid, Tom DeLonge, those people tried. It's true. They had this project, they tried to push the Tic Tacs, and they did manage to, you know, make it. Was that in 2020, though? I thought it was last year.
Peter Lavenda? Let's throw Peter Lavenda on the pyre here.
He was hired to do the book for them, yeah. Yeah, he's involved.
I think he was hired to do more than the book.
And the interviews for the books, of course.
He was hired as one of the people to do the rollout for one of the, do the project.
Yeah, but they roll out, you know, they have several levels. He's kind of their connection to the alt Remember, their main impact is not the alt. They do have a tighter alt, but that's not where they're working. They're working in mainstream media. They're trying to move that, and they're working with mainstream power players, politicians, bureaucrats, etc. And to a certain extent, they're also working with the mainstream public. And they did, if it was 20, I thought it was 19 they did this, but they did manage to move the needle in terms of now, you can, now it's actually legitimate in the mainstream. And when I say mainstream, I don't even just mean the mainstream press, like the mechanism of that press. I also mean YouTubers and everyone who is not very alt, like everybody who is in a mainstream paradigm. Now it's totally legitimate to entertain.
Okay, you know, Al, we really...
And they all have the old school. They're not entertaining dimensions and weird stuff like that. They're entertaining visitors from other planets, basically. So that's now in the white. You can do that. You won't be laughed, you know, snickered out of the room. And yeah, it's actually clean for the first time in our life, which is a kind of a big deal, actually.
I don't think it's a big deal.
Well,
we have to move on. You know, yeah, that one reason we talk so much is because we kind of don't agree on these. But we don't agree, you know, and that's what I think we did in the last show. So we don't need to kind of repeat it. But it's not about agreeing.
No, it's about
really being at this space where we are, where we really so fundamentally agree on all the most important things that we can move to the next level. I call it, you know, level three, where we can really start hashing out like we just did on the ET thing. We are both totally committed to the idea that the extended consciousness aspect of ET is where all the action really is.
Yeah.
So we're in agreement on that. So then we can disagree about to what extent is the physical manifestation of it as a nuts and bolts phenomenon. You know, how important is that? How does that play into it?
Yeah.
So I hope your people can follow on, and my people can too, but you know, that's where I'm pointing towards. Those are the discussions I want to have. And it's always going to come with disagreement, because if you think we're just a band of brothers because we both agree on, you know, that how fucked the world is and how they're just trying to railroad us into some completely controlled, scripted reality. I'm not interested in that. I'm not. That's just another trap to say, oh,
could I have a take on reframing what you just said?
Of course.
Forget the agreement thing. I think what matters is honesty, truth. I think the thing with people like you and me is that we recognize each other as truth seekers. And that's really a rare currency these days. Between co-opted people, hypnotized people, stupid people, hacks, trolls, sellouts. I think the value in the so-called alt is people who recognize other people as honest, sincere. That's the man of the people. And there we can afford, indeed it's an advantage with disagreement, as long as we know we have no fifth columnists, we have no spies in our midst. and then disagreements are good, because then we're back to the basic tools of moving forward the discussion and the investigation, which is thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So I think that's the most important currency you have and I have, that we are merciless truth seekers in each our own way. But it's funny, because 2020 for you, Alex, has been very philosophical. This revisionism about talking about UFOs. Yes, you did some UFO stuff, which you always do, but your main topic, at least the first half of the year, was the evil thing. And going through your shows, I mean, a very important show you did was Annika Lukas. You know, I tried to get her on, I tried to get Dr. Pasulka on, haven't managed, but in lieu of that, we have your shows with both of them. Two completely different topics, but very important topics. And I think Lukas may actually be the most challenging for the paradigm, because everybody, you know, the UFO thing is old and there's no lack of gurus there that you can trust. But when it comes to the disclosure of pedo rings, okay, people know to a certain extent it's real, like the Epstein thing, but how far it goes, they really don't know. And many people think that the children being abused thing is just like a meme or a myth. But then you drag someone like Lucas into the equation, and there's really no defense against that ugly truth anymore. Which is why I think, all in all, it's more paradigm challenging than whatever, for example, Richard Dolan could conjure up. What do you think?
Well, I think there's so much to talk about there. One, I was really struck by what you said at the beginning about honesty and sincerity, because for you and I think it just comes natural. We don't see it in any other way. And I'm not proclaiming myself to be kind of any. For me, it's more of the origin of the show. You know, I didn't have any economic drive in the show, and from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that was a gift that I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
Because I started the show before it was even economically viable to think about making any money podcasting. It just wasn't even at the beginning. Yeah. There just wasn't any thought of it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but that really set the tone for me, because I was always interested in this truth seeking and in understanding and in talking to the smartest people that I could. And I think that anyone who's listened to Forum Borealis gets the same thing. And like you said, with the long form, which is the care that you take to, I like what you said about not sweeping up all the little pieces that might fall on the floor, because invariably there's some of those little pieces turn out to be, you know, super important. So I'm going to add a couple little pieces to the Annika Lucas story, because, and for people who haven't heard from your show, who haven't heard about it, Annika Lucas I always say it the same way. One of the reasons I connect with Annika Lucas is because she's a yogi, and I'm a yogi, and
she literally is a yogi. It's the way she dealt with it. Kudos to her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she has a, you know, her who she is now, because we don't want to just talk about her in the past as if that's all she is. She is a woman now who does a non-for-profit where she goes in and helps incarcerated women in the United States in Northern New York by helping them deal with trauma through yoga. And I have actually talked to some of the people in her program about doing a yoga center, starting yoga classes out here. Again, because I think we're all traumatized in different ways. So she is a real person, and she's a powerful, forceful person that is making changes in the world today. But, well, of course, the story is the true story. Her life story is that at 6 years old, her mother sold her to a satanic ritual abuse cult. And that's really important. You know, talking about sweeping up the pieces, it was a satanic cult. Now, I'm not a Christian, so I have to spend an hour with you deconstructing what Satanism means to me.
Yeah, we've done that, man.
And what evil means to me.
Yeah, we've done that.
And we're not going to do that here, because
no.
we already did that. But the point is...
Yeah, hang on. Let me inject. I totally switched my answer again. Actually, the evil show I did with you is probably my favorite. Why? Because I think that's the only time during 2020 that, and I really regret it now when I look at it like this, but it's the only show where I felt that I could go all the way philosophically with no breaks. And I guess I had to do it with you. See, occasionally I can do that. Like, I've done it with Joseph Farrell. We've delved so deep into a topic that we're coming out on the other side. And for 2020, I don't think I did that much, except with you in the evil show. We went all the way, you know, within time constraints and physical limitations. But yeah, that was a classical in-depth show. I really appreciated that one. And we really conjured up. Again, it was the dynamic of both understanding, better to say understanding than agreeing, the big picture. Understanding the big picture and then fencing on the details. But anyway, go on with Lucas.
Well, I really appreciated that show too. And I loved that I was able to bring you into that kind of philosophical discussion, because I love your shows that are, you know, new information shows, I guess I would call them, you know, they're terrific. And we all sit there and you ask great questions and we learn. But I love pulling you out of that role a little bit and hearing you think more broadly and talk more broadly, because this, and you are one of the great people to do it with for me on this topic of evil that I've spent so much time on, because the whole premise of my thing was that we need your kind of deeper thinking in that, because the premise is that if we look to science, we're fucking lost when it comes to evil, because they completely deny that it even exists. And when you throw Annika Lucas in their face and say, she's, first of all, she's not the only one, you know, I mean, there's, it's not like this is the lone person who's ever said this. I mean, if you really listen carefully,
but her case is tight. The evidence, people were.
Well, it's the whole Dutroux thing, you know, that was just all over the news, and like always.
Yeah, you can't deny it. So
you can't deny it. And so imagine, you know, a 6-year-old child being raped hundreds and hundreds of times, multiple times a day, taken to, you know, a big mansion, castle/mansion, and being raped by people that she recognized as world leaders.
Elites.
And it being satanic. So, because we always want to leave that out. We say, oh, pedophilia. Well, okay, it's not pedophilia. That means love of child. We're talking about raping kids. And we're talking about also what she reveals is that her path was to be killed.
Yeah.
And she had seen other kids killed. And there was a table, blood-soaked table, where they killed them. And she was on that table. So I think we have to be more precise about, you know, what we're talking. So, but what I like is you and I were able to talk about what that means to say satanic ritual abuse inside of a culture that has been totally mind-fucked by Christianity. Christianity is just a complete sham, right? I mean, there's a realness to Christ consciousness. Apparently, in these extended realms, there is a realness to Christ consciousness because it's reported all over the place. Like the near-death experience is reported, and it's all loving, and it's all good, and it's life-transforming. It's spiritually transforming in a positive way. So that's one anchor point. But those Catholic priests and popes and bishops that are raping those little kids, they sure as hell ain't of the same spiritual orientation. So those two things cannot exist in a resolvable way. So we are in this understanding of evil. We're forced with one side, look at complete useful idiot and mindless, you know, intentionally ignoring it just by saying it doesn't exist, which I think is conspiratorial, and that's science. And then we have religion who just has no seat at the table because they've been a part of it. Yeah. So our discussion, I appreciate it because that's just me talking, you know. I don't even know if you can put that out. This is what alienates so many people from my thing. But I don't know any other way to say that. And I don't feel a need to say it any other way. So I just kind of say it directly. But we were able to go there. And as you know, I'm not able to go there with most people because they're sensitive on one or more of those points.
Yeah. No, it's a silo thing. But 2020 has really been a dark year in many aspects. I guess the silver lining has been that people who needed it, not you and me, but many mainstream people, sleepwalkers, as we arrogantly referred to them last time we talked, they got shaken out of their hypnosis, and now they're starting to really question the paradigm and their an existence is always a good thing. You know, the silent majority, as they call that generation, they were the most humble of all. Of course, they were succeeded by the most spoiled, disgusting generation, the boomers, but the silent majority, they had to suffer through war and everything, so they knew real values. And it's going to be the same with the generations who experience this stuff, because many people got a time out and they got to understand real values again. And here in my country, like I said last time we talked, nobody was thrown to the wolves. Everybody understood that when you are forced to shut down and become a prisoner in your own home, you're going to get bailed out from that. So everybody got bailed out. And a positive spill out of that was that now more people than ever work from home, like you and me do. And they hated it in the beginning. Now they love it. Now they prefer it. So many jobs, when they come back in this country, not in yours, there they're destroyed, but elsewhere, then many people will continue working at home. And many people will also, if we ever get society back to something resembling normality, they will value much more what we took for granted before the lockdowns. You know, distancing and all that stuff just goes to a fundamental... I mean, it's the most alienated step in human artificial evolution, because we are not supposed to be close to each other. We're not supposed to hug each other. We're not supposed to, you know, all these things that we grew up and it was just taken for granted. And it's ingrained in us back to the tribal society. We're really going to be removed from such a crucial, essential human feature like that. I really wonder how, I mean, it's the transhumanist's wet dream. But precisely because we robbed of that is why people will value that much more. And I guess this Christmas, people were, you know, they could meet family again and be physically present again. And I think just in general, people value that much more that they didn't do before. And so the question is, 2021, will that be just as dark? Was this just the first step? And I have to, before we started, I recommended to you a new report from Corbett. I want to give a shout out to that one. It's called Future Vaccines, one of the last shows he made, a documentary. Everybody run and watch that. I try to debunk the contents because I don't want it to be true. It's very sober, like all the stuff he does, super documented. But unfortunately, I think everything there is true. And in that case, 2021 will be the real end game. It will be the real decision point of where humanity is going. So 2021 could be completely dark, much darker than 2020. But it can also be the opposite. It can also be a healthy backlash to what happened in 2020.
Wow, that's huge. I mean, you said so many things there that, and I made a note on a couple of them that I wanted to pull out. Your point about this being a generation-defining moment.
A new 9/11 or JFK.
Fuck 9/11. This is on a... I think you've tapped into something there that puts it in the proper perspective, and that's why I called it out like that. No, this is generation-defining.
Yeah.
This is World War II generation-defining. You know, the people who went through World War II, we still hold them in a reverence because we understand that they went through a transformation. Yeah. And at the beginning, we were very reluctant to call this that because we made jokes about, you know, the greatest generation was called to war and we're called to sit in front of the TV and watch Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that. And it's a funny joke. But at this point, going on a year, it's something different. And the fear factor that's been played into this is something different that we've had to endure. And the global consequences of this is something we've had to endure. I believe it is, as you described it, generation defining. The other thing that I think the point that I wanted to pull out that you talked about was artificial evolution. That is clearly what's at play here, both a social evolution that's artificial and what they're really aiming for is some kind of physical evolution that's artificial as well. So I think it's great for you to call that out. But your biggest point, and I think this is what I think it's potentially true. I don't know if it's true, like you. Yeah. I don't know which way this plays out. But I do think they may have overplayed their hand. You know, one of the points I really took away from the discussion that we had just a couple days ago was that the oligarchs are not, they're not bulletproof. In some cases, they're not even that smart. they're not playing it right. They're not even playing it to their full advantage. And they might have overplayed their hand here. Because as you mentioned, when you get together at Christmas and you give someone a hug and you say, fucking A, I needed that, you needed that. Mm. What the hell are we, how have we been mesmerized, hypnotized into this nonsense? It could have the kind of backlash that could really turn the tide in a longer term game that they've been playing. So I just totally resonate with everything you just said there for 2021.
I'm tempted to go all the way down the rabbit hole now and entertain a few scenarios. Because you were saying this may be a physical evolution kind of, and they're overplaying the hand. Yes, we agree they are dumb. The oligarchs of today are inbred idiots, and they've forgotten the lessons of the past. But, and you're right, the generations of the past, first the depression and then the war. Now we are having a depression and a war simultaneously. But what if this isn't the oligarchs' plan at all? What if the oligarchs are just in for the ride? I mean, they are looting. They are basically
how are those two different, though? I mean, we have to be clear because people stumble
well,
over.
I'm going to go all the way down the rabbit hole. I'm not saying I believe this, but let's entertain it. What if there is much more intelligent forces that are behind whatever can look like some kind of plan here? Because the oligarchs are like any...
Hold on, can I interject? Let's just be specific on that, because I hate when we talk for 15 minutes and people are like, what the hell are they really talking about? So let me throw out a couple and tell me if these are on the table for you.
Yeah.
One is the obvious one that just stuns me, that it's population control, right? I mean, the planet doesn't work right if you keep adding...
No, okay, but you're talking about intentions. I'm talking about perpetrators.
So I'm saying maybe one of the agenda items for the perpetrators is population control. Maybe another agenda, and I'm not saying I believe in any of this. I want you to respond. I just want to make it explicit. So another one would just be one world government, and that could even be related to some kind of interplanetary plan, right? Those two fit together quite nicely.
I was going there.
I know you were. I just want to make it I thought you were,
but
I want to make it explicit so that people know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So one could be people who are just running this from kind of a bureaucratic level, saying there's too many people for the resources, we need to cut down on the population. Checkbox there, possibility. Another possibility checkbox is to say kind of the same thing, but say we just want one world government because we want to control stuff and it's better for business to have one world and it's Hunger Games and that's how we do it. Checkbox.
Yeah. Like the honest globalism argument. Yeah.
And a third possibility, and these are not mutually exclusive, but they can be looked at mutually exclusive, is some kind of interplanetary exopolitical thing where, you know, we've been talking to some group and they're like, dude, but you know, we can't really go forward with you guys until you get it together. And, you know, we have kind of one group that we're talking to. We're not going to go around to 50 different groups, you know, get it under control down there. And we're ready to help you move into the future. So please continue, but and add any other ones if you want. But I think those are at least three of the things that you're talking about.
Yeah, but I have two much worse to add. First off, forget the Star Trek thing. If it was like that, they would never, you know, like Gandhi said, the goal and the path is one. So the means will never justify the goal. Now, so if it was like that, welcome to the enlightened global community. They would never accept it. You know, we're going to be tricked and forced and suppressed into...
I get you. I'm just throwing it out there.
It's worse. What if they are goddamn cannibals? Why are they... One thing is to socially transform Earth. Why do they need to mess with our DNA? Because what the virus is doing is one thing, which is pretty unforeseen. And that's why I enjoy the show with both George Webb and Dr. Apsley, because they were pointing to how this is an unprecedented virus with the four strains mixed in one, including HIV, which is why it is disarming your immunity. But if you look at the future vaccine program I mentioned, you'll see that the solution they have in place isn't a vaccine at all. That's the problem. It's messing with our DNA. And this goes straight into the most paranoid aspect of skeptical shows, because you, much more than me, have entertained the notion of aliens. So, I mean, if we were an alien species and we wanted to take over Earth, forget about the 1950s scenario, you know, like fighting in the streets. That never works. That's like America didn't even manage that in Vietnam or in Syria or Iraq. Whatever, right? that's the dumb caveman version. No. What's going on now could be a much more effective way to cleanse the Earth and transform it to whatever's coming. So that's that paranoid dark scenario, just mentioning it, not saying I believe it. But another one, which I don't believe, because I don't think AI is possible, but if, and you remember, you and me have gone back and forth on this, but if it was, AI would already be calling the shots and trying to, you know, find the most effective way. But you can be old school too. You can also just say that, because I asked Richard Dolan of this, I think both times I had him on, and both times he acknowledged it as a very good question that he rarely gets, which is that what if the oligarchs are not calling the shots? Because power is where power is, and if you have access to toys that makes the rest of the world look caveman, then you are in power. No matter if someone else owns the money and stuff, you have the weapons, you have the time machine, the space machine, the whatever, that sect, that clique, that Nazi CIA kind of breakaway civilization really have more power, because they can take over the economy anytime they want. And indeed, we see some, even 9/11, if you look into Joseph Farrell's take on that, you'll see that it's actually more esoteric than... you know what? Let me read something to you that a listener of mine sent me, okay? And then I want you...
Sure.
Your,
sure.
Okay. So, regard this. So... Dr. Tatiana Koryagina, a senior research fellow for the Institute of Macroeconomic Research under the Russian Ministry of Economic Development and close to President Putin's inner circle, said the 9/11 attacks were not the work of 19 terrorists, but a group of extremely powerful private persons seeking to reshape the world. This group, she added, has assets of about $300 trillion, which they will use to legitimize its power and create a new world government. This report was even appeared even in Pravda on July 12, 2001. As yet another prediction of dire events that would befall the United States in August 2001. In other words, Russia had precise knowledge of what Mr. Blair called an unnamed global group. Yeah, because I skipped that part, sorry. And let me go on here. And precise financial knowledge of its assets. This implies something equally important for our analysis, for it means that not only did Russia know of a deeper layer than simply a rogue element within American national security state, it also strongly suggests the possibility that Putin's government communicated this information to the Bush administration prior to the 9/11 attacks, given that there is evidence suggesting some involvement of the Bush administration in the planning of the drills behind which mirror aspects of the 9/11 attacks. We posit that the Russian intelligence information may in part be behind the realization on the part of the Bush administration that a coup attempt was in progress and that it had to be headed off. The allegations of Dr. Koryagina also imply something else, and equally significant. The global group must have had detailed inside financial knowledge and connections, which the Russians also knew. So this Farrell mentioned in his book on 9/11, he's talking about layers of conspiracy, layers of planning that went on. And so then we're back to our concept of a small group, a break of a civilization. We've been hunting them down because it all started with the Bormann Brotherhood back in the 40s and the 50s. And it's just developed into this machine, this corporate cartel mafia group. And it is a real extraterrestrial, not extraterrestrial, it's a real extraterritorial group, it's better to say. They're not bound by countries. Because the normal oligarchs, they have everything to gain of maintaining the status quo, because this is their game. They are getting everything. So why would they screw this up? So we have to look at an ex-player. Being aliens, being extraterritorial, being AI, being something out of Pandora's box like that. We have to introduce it to the philosophical mix, at least. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know quite what that gets us when we have so many pieces that are already, we can lay our hands on and say, you know, in terms of like what happened after 9/11. Certainly, the wars that were planned, the fact that the Patriot Act in the United States, which is a 1,000-page legislation, landed on the desk of all the representatives who had to vote on it, literally within hours after 9/11. You can't write it in an hour. You can't write those 1,000
pages. Well, that's the shock doctrine. It just happened now. It just happened now with the latest bill. The only a handful of congressmen were against it. It's long. It's the longest bill in history. It's longer than the longest book in history, which is The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. And they had like a few hours to decide to vote for it. And it contains everything under the earth, except money to the American people. But they have money for Trump's wall. They have money for Israel, Egypt, lots of countries. They have money for insane things. So it's just a pillage. It's a loot of the current system. And that tells me one thing, Alex. When they do this, it means there's no going back. In the powers that be, whoever they are, however far we will speculate, they are not planning on a return to normal society. That's why they are looting the treasury and killing off businesses. You know, in a capitalist society, that would never happen. You know, just eradicate whole lines of industries. So they're doing that, breaking people's economy forever. Surely something else is in the pipeline than going back to normal, because there's no going back to normal, even if we want to, especially not in America.
Well, let's, as we kind of wrap this up, let's kind of talk about that and go back to the conversations that we've had in the past in this year, 2020, because I think it really gets to, well, the heart of the issue that I've been on, which is kind of the evil thing. The reason I think the evil thing is so important is because I think it relates to your question of the oligarchs not being in power. And, you know, so you just gave evidence to why we should be suspicious of the idea that these few shadowy figures we see who are pulling these economic levers are really the people in power. What you're hinting at is that there's some force that's larger than that, whether it's AI, whether it's some exopolitical thing. Well, the other thing I guess I'd point to is I don't think we have to even look that far. We just look to Anna Kalucas and we say, okay, you've been around some of the most powerful men in the world. What do they care about? Who do they say are pulling the strings? And they say, well, I don't know, but they get together and they do these satanic ritual abuse. So take satanic, but they do these ceremonies. They're obviously trying to, not trying, they're connecting with an extended consciousness realm. And that extended consciousness realm is reaching them in this realm. So the fact that we can't really talk about that. We can talk for hours and we never kind of get around to really saying, okay, what does that really mean? What does that mean in a way that isn't dorky out of my little Bible here kind of definition, or dorky out of my scientific peer-reviewed paper? It says, well, that couldn't possibly be possible because consciousness is an illusion. What is going on? And you're in a seat where you've studied this at great length. What are in these extended realms? Because they are clearly part of the power structure that is at play here. And what are they, what is their take on all this? Why can't we even have a discussion about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you and I did, but then we're having
did. But who can? No, the satanic thing, I mean, you could argue it's a cover or whatever, but you're right on the deepest level possible. You are right, because wherever we get our impulses from, at the end of the day, every human being has to make an ethical choice about their own life. And if your own life impacts other people, like it usually do if you're a parent or if you're a boss or whatever. But imagine if you're an oligarch or a general or a CIA agent or whatever, a bankster, then it does... At the end of the day, it does influence the rest of society. And then, yes, your ethical thing will have impact. And if there are sinister forces out there influencing that level of our values system, of our emotions, or good forces for that matter, then there will be a battle, a war in heaven that will be parallel to whatever happens. But you know, I don't want to throw in the towel like you're signalizing. What if we have a lightning round where we're going through the rest of your questions? Because I really want this to be, the whole talk we've had so far has been amused around the red thread, which is 2020-2021. We've sticked to that today. And I think because of that...
Okay, lightning round. I'm going to start it. Okay.
Yep.
What show were you most proud of in 2020? Most proud of whether anyone else recognized it or listened to it. Which show did you say, I did a good job there?
There's so many different levels you can answer that on, you know?
You always say that, you realize,
I know,
don't you?
So yeah, I'm even more specific. But I got Richard Dolan on, so on a personal level, I was very pleased. He was impossible to get on. Much thanks to you, by the way. If you hadn't got him on right before, I don't know if I had him on. I got your wife on, I'm proud of that. I guess it's...
Of your performance, not just proud of booking them.
Okay.
What were you proud of the way you handled it? I mean, I know what shows I thought I was most affected by of yours, but I want your answer. What do you think?
But you're going to answer for yourself, not for mine. I think maybe one of the last shows, San Perion, on a completely different topic on the gender game. Because he's a big shot. People don't understand what a big shot is. Within his field, he's a huge big shot. And me and him had a very good chemistry. So a very good... And it's like a positive subject. Not just a depressive subject. So I think maybe that one, in a way. What about you?
Who was that again? Sam who?
Zan Perion. Zan
Perion.
Yeah, he's like a lifestyle coach. A guru.
Now, is that published?
It's published to the subscribers. It's not out to the public, but the subscribers who listen to this have had a chance to listen to that too. It's called The Beauty of Honest Seduction. It's just basically how to become a man.
Okay, I'm going to have to go back and look at it because I'm a subscriber, so I'm going to go and look.
You are, but I mean, you're probably not that motivated. You have your babe. You are a man.
No! No. Okay. It's just when you have to go different places to get the content, you know, then you have to go into the secret section, you know, sometimes.
This is a lightning round. Which one are you most pleased with?
You know, one that jumps to mind that didn't get a lot of attention and just kind of went out and no one paid any attention is my interview with Mark Pitstick on after death communication.
Oh,
and this is a guy who is working with Dr. Gary Schwartz at University of Arizona to develop a soul phone, you know, an ability to talk to the dead. And I think they've completely bungled it. I think their work is fundamentally, critically important for putting a final death blow to materialism, but they've just kind of taken it in a very weird, wacky direction. And I just think pointing that out, and it was an uncomfortable interview at various times, but.
Oh, was it? Why?
Oh, yes. Anyone can just go listen to it.
Yeah,
I mean, I really kind of held him accountable to what I think is a wacky, you know, their science is good. Their conclusions are somewhat wacky, and they're going to turn people off. And
so he's one of the materialists who researched
this? No. He is. I'm just getting lightning round. So I'm just going to throw that. We'll move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Let's see. Here's a good one for you. What topic do you feel was left unfinished for you that you plan on finishing in 2021? Or maybe take that last part out. Even if you don't plan on finishing it, what do you feel unfinished business with in 2020?
You know, I have several series.
Yes.
So every goddamn topic probably is going to deliberately be rolled out more in 2021. I did economy, I did solar system anomalies, the virus I think won't go away. I have to take the vaccines on, you know. That's going to be a big one for the coming year. Ancient continents, the gender game, no. Even evil, I feel I won't be able to leave alone forever. No, I think everyone. I'm not made for these kind of questions. I love them, but I'm the worst answerer to all of them.
Well, that's what makes it kind of interesting, really, because this is not the stuff that you're comfortable with. You know, mine would be, as I kind of explained, I think the Christianity thing really needs more unpacking, because I'm surprised at how many people continue to be hoodwinked by just the absurdity of the idea. And I am totally into spirituality, and spirituality is the most important thing in my life.
Yeah, but you never really did that, man. You never really had a broadside period against Christians. I mean, you've tolerated them from time to time. You've lashed out against them where they deserve.
I don't know. My interviews with Joseph Atwell are pretty kind of in your face. And I did one last year, you know, Joseph Atwell, Why the Bible is Pro-Roman. And again, that's another one I thought was good. And I think people still don't quite get it. But I think that's what needs to be extended, is that if you don't understand that this PSYOP thing has always been wound up in religion, then you're going to be incapable of deconstructing it. And you're going to be more open to the viruses that will come, the mind viruses that will come. Because, you know, like we're talking at the very beginning of the Santa thing, you know. Okay, so on one hand, Santa is this. On the other hand, Santa lowers your vulnerability to really just absurd things that you just go along with because you look around the people around you and like, well, everyone else is saying it makes sense. So I guess
people won't get the reference, because I don't think we taped that when we talked about that. So they don't
know. They'll know enough.
You're referring to the fact that children are taught the Santa myth, and when they realize it's not real anymore, they go one of two places. Either they become skeptical and suspicious and deny, you know, debunker of everything, or they just get a healthy dose of anti-authoritarianism, because they, at a subconscious level, they recall that I was told something, it wasn't true. That can happen again. I have one for you for the lightning round. How would you describe this year in 3 to 5 keywords? That's a good one. And we talk about 2020, not the coming year.
You know, that is a good one. And, you know, it's like like I've described it to my kids. It's kind of a trite thing, but unprecedented in my life, my entire life, never anything even close.
Not just in your life. There's never been, well, maybe if we go back to Atlantis, but in known history, there's never been one incident that has affected the whole goddamn globe. I mean, go back to the Black Plague.
That's a great point.
Right? Go back to the Black Plague. There was one corner of Earth where, you know, you could be like, No, I'm an enlightened Buddha. I'm just sitting here in my cave doing my own thing. I don't care what's going on in the Maya illusion globe. But now it's like if the Earth was like 50 different video games, all sorts, you know, from Sims to Axis and Allies to all sorts of video games in one. Different styles, different types. Now it's like the whole Earth is forced into becoming one big video game. It's like the walls of the different video games that went on here are cracked in, and there's an overarching game that, oh, you thought you were playing Monopoly? Bam! Welcome to this futuristic game. Oh, you thought you were doing SimCity or whatever they call it? You know, dressing up princesses? Oh, welcome to the real world. It is goddamn unprecedented in terms of both space and time.
You know, that's... Shit, Al, you are brilliant with these things. No, I just can't stress that enough. And I always like to repeat it when things strike me that hard. But number one, the point that you make that's so easy for us to overlook because we're just swimming in the sea of it, of this global communication network infrastructure, 24-hour news, we are one world and we've never been one world before. So the fact that this has happened is truly historic because, of course, we could never go back to one time, a time when we're this connected. So I just don't think a lot of people have said that, but I think the way that you said that with relative to the impact of this, it's made it tenfold greater because of that. And the other point that you make, I think that analogy is super powerful because I think we all relate to that analogy as being some fundamental, truer than maybe just an analogy in some fundamental way that we don't even want to crack in terms of the simulation experience.
I didn't say that. I left that to you. Okay.
Well, but I think that's where you took us in a way. And I think that's a great, we are all being forced to play the same simulation narrative. Mm. And there doesn't seem to be any way out because it's a one world kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's unprecedented, like you said. If I was going to put 3 to 5 keywords on next year, I would say end game, although the end game can be prolonged, but at least we will see the beginning of the end game. And I would also say the great choice. I think 2021 is the great choice because if the end game is rolled out, it all depends on how people of the globe will react to it. And I do think more people are waking up. I tried to argue that last time and we got hijacked into a cul-de-sac. So I won't give examples, but I'm saying there are signs they're waking up. So it's a great choice. Where do we go from here? Because if we have a globe-shattering event, which we had, and it's the mildest we could have. If I was to choose, I would choose this one much more than, let's say, tilt of the globe poles or a meteorite, or there's so much that could have this kind of impact. A complete economic collapse. I mean, worse than what we've seen. No, I think this is the better one. And because no matter what would be thrown at us at a global scale, we would have a choice. And now we have the choice. And it's coming for 2021. So I think numerological too, you will see it completely works out. 2021 is kind of a 9/11 again. It's a great choice, and I can't say which way it goes. I just can't, because the powers that be are more powerful than ever. But in the same cliche, every time people say that, they also say that more people than ever have woken up, and it's still true. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I don't think, you know, people will never agree upon a reality. That's the problem, that they are, no, I can't join forces with you because we don't agree about every detail. That's why we have stuff like religions, right? Like Jewish, Islam, Christian, or like left, right in politics. We have all these artificial things dividing us when we don't realize. We can bicker about that when we got our world back. First, we have to fucking get our world back, man. It's a primary needs where we are bound to the hip, you know? And people don't get that, so they still bicker in the old school paradigm as if that's still valid. Losers, wake up. There's no such thing as free speech anymore or free press. Look at Assange. Oh, don't get me started. Let's move on to the next lightning round. Let's afford the rest of it.
No, I think let me comment on, okay. on that, because again, I think you made two really important points in your kind of prediction. You did a kind of a predictive thing.
Yeah.
The end game and the great choice. And I was just thinking, as you were saying that, I was thinking, it's really hard to argue with that. It's hard to argue with the idea that we haven't reached some decision point, or we're entering into some decision point, which is, I think, what you're pointing to. And I think we all feel that in a real way.
And they try to get away with whatever they can. So it's up to us to stop it. Like, for example, you need the shot to be able to travel. Free people, principled people like you and me, may remain in a prison.
Oh, I mean, there's no freaking way. And this gets back to what we were talking about before. You know, do they overplay their hand? Because you push certain people too far, and it's not going to end well for them. You know, so yeah, you know, that's a point you made in the last show. So, and I thought yeah. you made it quite well about Roosevelt. I've mulled over that point a couple of times since then, and that, you know, your point of Roosevelt said, you guys think I destroyed capitalism? Fuck you. I saved capitalism. Yeah. I mean, you want to drive people towards, you know, socialism, then just kind of give them nothing. Well, here, I think we're seeing the same thing in kind of the opposite. Mm. You want to drive people towards libertarianism or towards another, you know, American Revolution from our perspective.
Yeah.
You're doing it. You're absolutely setting the fires.
Say freedom, because libertarian is such a narrowly defined.
Yes.
Say liberty.
Yes. The liberty, but all the any word you choose has. But we get what
and
we
autonomy. Let's not forget, because that's closely. If you don't have autonomy, you don't have freedom. Those two things go together.
I agree, and I think that when that is pushed too far, I don't know. Something could happen there. But I think we've done good work here.
Yep. It was fun.
I think we've had a good chat about 2020.
Yep.
And about 2021. So now, in classic kind of end of year fashion, we have to have some kind of merriment and some kind of cheer session at the end.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to end this behind the scenes in a way I've never done before. I'm going to out one of my songs, and I'm going to end my version of this recording with a song where I'm singing, because I think my listeners, if they care enough to peek behind the scenes stuff, they're going to also find amusement in hearing something new. Like when you tricked me out of my shadows onto the camera, that was like a news thing, right?
So this is cool. Well, yeah, you got to send this.
It's healthy, man. It's healthy. But yeah, it's creative to be a podcaster. Come on. You're super.
Oh, no, I'm not putting that down. I'm just saying I don't paint. I don't.
No, not that classical sense of a creative outlet. No. But who needs that? I mean, you just need one. And that's a message I've had for all these years. People really underestimate creativity. Something that can battle diseases, something that can battle depression. It can even battle the goddamn dictatorship they're trying to put on us.
Yes. There it is. See, I said we needed this uplifting. There it is.
Yes.
And that's the lead into the song, because we're all creative beings. I said it wrong, and I don't even believe what I just said. We're all constantly creating and expressing our, if we're not, then we should be expressing our unique creative being who we are all the time.
And so if you don't have a creative outlet in your life, you're listening to this, find one. I don't care if you're making food, if you're doing some autistic thing, collecting number plates, you can find a million ways to be creative. Do it. Do it, because it's your God-given gift. And the song, by the way, is called The Garden of Souls. And I do think it's a Sufi poetry that I've made into a song lyric. So, yeah, I think it's ending it on a more positive spin.
Buddy, buddy, you just did it perfectly. There is that's going to be the intro to the song that I'm going to play.
And here it is. Until next time, take care and bye for now.
My fleeting life has come and gone.
Let us be.